Thank you, Martin. Good morning, everybody. Just to reflect actually on that vote, you're entirely in line with the national opinion polls. You're not the stereotypes you may have thought. Mind you, when you break it down by which surgical group or trainees, it may be different. So we can have a look at that later. But actually, you're not that far out. I apologise that the programmes had to be changed, but when ministers determine that I have to be there at 2 p.m. this afternoon to meet them, I have to be there, so that's just the way of the world. But thank you very much for changing the order of the programme round. What I want to do is give you a very brief overview of the cancer reform strategy and how it applies to breast cancer. I've ditched my slides because I think that'll be quicker. But just to say to begin with, the cancer reform strategy, which came out last December, very definitely builds on existing progress. It builds on Kalman-Hein from 1995 and on the cancer plan from 2000. And so it's not a revolution. It's hopefully evolutionary. But it does recognise that we're all facing new challenges and new opportunities. Cancer is moving on, the NHS is moving on, and we need therefore to do different things. What we've tried to do is set out a direction just for the next 5 years. The reason for that is that it's almost impossible to predict what treatments will be like in 2020. But I think for over the next 5 years, we really can look at that. And as far as breast cancer was concerned, we set up a working group chaired by Jeremy Hughes from Breakthrough Breast Cancer to help us look at what we really should be doing over the next few years. And a lot of the decisions were based on their recommendations. And the background, as Martin's just indicated, is that if you go back to the 1990s, although there was absolutely no doubt that our survival rates for breast cancer were improving, our mortality rate was falling faster actually than anywhere else in the world, our survival rates were still lagging behind other European countries. Now, I don't trust every single European country's data, but I do trust Sweden, Norway, Finland, and they were all several percentage points ahead of us, and I think we have to learn from that. So as we were improving during the 1990s, they were improving but were ahead of us. So we still had a gap to close. Now, I don't know how much we've closed of that gap as yet. My guess is that we've closed it partially but not totally. Equally, we know that looking forwards, we've got more patients with cancer going to be diagnosed, largely because we're living to the age where cancer gets common. We're going to have new developments from science, new diagnostics, and new treatments. If we talk to the pharmaceutical industry, they tell us that over half of all drugs that are currently in development are targeted at cancer. Now, not all of those are going to work, but some of them will, and what you can be absolutely sure about is they'll all be expensive. So there will be challenges for us about that. In essence, the outline of the cancer reform strategy is, as you might expect, it goes from prevention through screening and early diagnosis onto better treatment, better care. It also looks at how we're going to make it happen and what the drivers are for delivery. And two particular drivers, one being better information, and I think that's highly relevant to today's meeting because, as always, breast cancer has been setting the pace in that direction, and particularly the breast screening program, and also then linked to better data, stronger commissioning, and I'll come back to those. But first of all, what about screening itself? Well, the extension of screening that came with the cancer plan, which, as you will remember, took us up from being age 50 to 64 up to routine screening up to age 70 and brought in the two-view mammography. I mean, that has been a huge success, and I think it's thanks to everybody in this room. There's been a 60% increase in the number of breast cancers detected through screening, a huge change. We do still have problems. Let's acknowledge those. We have problems in some parts of the country with the three-year round length, and we are monitoring that very closely because we absolutely know that if you let that slip beyond the 36 months, it really does have dangers for patients in terms of the cancers that may then not be curable. The main thing that we have done in the cancer reform strategy is to make this commitment that we will add two extra rounds of screening, one below the age of 50 and one over the age of 70. Incidentally, since we came out with the cancer reform strategy, there's evidence from Holland that actually suggests that that older age group, when they've looked at it, that they have seen particular benefit in terms of the decreased mortality in people aged 75 to 79, because obviously screening picks them up in their early 70s, but the deaths would have happened perhaps a few years later. Now that's going to be a major program to implement, and we'll need all of your help. One of the things that we are committed to doing alongside that is bringing in digital mammography, and there are discussions going on at the Department of Health at the moment about whether we can have a central drive on that, a central pot of money, and really use that to get, first of all, the best deals that we can, but also to get it done as quickly as we can, because we think that really will make a difference to the screening programme. But it's not only about screening, it's also about early diagnosis of symptomatic cases. And we do know that we still have a problem on this. We know that if you talk to women in the public, there's still poor awareness of breast cancer, and particularly poor awareness of the fact that the risk of breast cancer goes on going up with age. And so, unfortunately, older people don't know that older people are at risk of breast cancer. So there's more that we need to do at a community level in terms of educating them. There's also poor knowledge of symptoms other than a lump. And what we know is if we look at those who delay, although non-lump presentations are only about 20% of breast cancers, they account for 60% of the delays. So we need to get messages across on that front. And we also know that there are still people who do experience delays in primary care, and obviously that matters as well. So what are we doing? We're setting up a national awareness and early diagnosis initiative, because we've got to target this. If we just do awareness without it being targeted, we get what I think you would probably all recognise as the Kylie Minogue effect. The Kylie Minogue effect is that in the month after her diagnosis, the number of people coming to breast units where this was recorded, I think, went up by 60%, the number of mammograms went up by 60%, the number of ultrasounds went up by 60%, number of diagnoses went up by 0%. So that is untargeted awareness raising, and so we've got to do better than that, trying to get the messages through to those groups in society who are most likely to delay and need to be encouraged to come forward. The next thing that we want to do in terms of cancer as a whole is on the waiting times. What we want to do is to extend the benefit of the targets to a wider group of patients. We know, for example, that the 2-week wait and the 62-day target only pick up about 1/3 of all patients with cancer. And so can we get that extended to other groups? And in terms of breast cancer in particular, as you will probably be aware, decisions been made that basically we ought to be seeing all patients, whether urgent or non-urgent, we ought to be seeing them within 2 weeks. I think that will be good practice anyway, and we think it's doable in breast cancer. Why do we think it's doable? Because there are some parts of the country that are already doing it. And the variety of solutions to how to do it, and whether that's through nurse practitioners, doing clinical assessment, variety of routes, but by the end of 2009, we are expecting to see that across the country, and I think that that would be good practice. It's what one would want to do in private practice. It's what one would want to do in other countries, so we ought to be doing it too. Equally, we are extending the 31-day target, that's the one about between decision to treat and treatment, which at present only applies to the first treatment for cancer. That's going to be for all treatments. The real impact here is going to be on radiotherapy. It's going to be a major driver to get radiotherapy waiting times sorted out. I think we all know that that is still a problem across the country. Equally, on the 62-day target, there are two important things here. Patients coming through the screening route will be subject to that target, same as the ones who are coming through as urgent referrals from GPs. By the way, those who are picked up through screening, the likelihood they've got cancer is actually as high as it would be amongst those who've got urgently referred by GPs, so it makes perfectly good sense. And the other thing is, at the hospital end, if hospital specialists want to put people on the fast track because they think it's a cancer, then they should have the right to do so. On treatment, we have emphasised, and I think this audience will recognise this, we've emphasised the fact that surgery is still the main curative treatment for cancer. And therefore, equally, it means that high-quality surgery really matters. And where we need training programmes, we should have them. Now, we've got good examples of training programmes that have already been rolled out in terms of breast cancer. Of course, that's sentinel node biopsy training is the example, but we're also doing things in other areas like colorectal cancer, laparoscopic surgery. I think, equally, we need to make sure on breast cancer that we've got adequate coverage by surgeons who can conduct oncoplastic surgery. On radiotherapy, I've said that we are going to have a major expansion of capacity there because we know we need it. And on the drug side, the main commitment there has been to try and reduce the interval between a drug getting its license and getting appraised by NICE. We've got a new fast-track process, which is now up and running and should, for the future drugs, make a big difference. Equally, we want to look just beyond treatment to what happens after that, and there's a new emphasis on survivorship. And what is survivorship? It's anyone who is either living with or beyond cancer. And this is a term that's coming to us from the United States. And I think the key point here is that when somebody's completed their treatment, we really need to tailor their follow-up, their future care to their requirements, so-called survivorship care planning. And we've now got working groups looking at how that could be in practice. But also, we want to see more emphasis on the care of people with advanced cancer or secondary cancer. And I think, again, it's the field of breast cancer that's been leading on this, saying, hold on a minute, a lot of the attention's been on primary cancer. That's been entirely appropriate because that's where we've been able to make real improvements in mortality, for example. But now we do need to look more at what happens when people get secondary cancer and are they getting the quality of care that they need. We want to see a shift from inpatient work to more ambulatory care work. Why? Because we know that in other countries they do more of this than we do. Lengths of stay are shorter. That releases money for other things. It's also good for patients. So that's going to be another main area of activity. In terms of the drivers to make all this happen, I've already mentioned information. And the key here is that clinical teams will be mandated to collect agreed data sets and to feed that through to their cancer registries. And I think when we look at some of the data later on from the symptomatic audit, we'll see how valuable that can be. In my view, if you are a multidisciplinary team, it should be your duty to collect that information. We need to give the support to be able to make that happen. But let's collect that data, then let's share it with the registries and through the registries to this new organisation called the National Cancer Intelligence Network. The registries are working with that. We also want the professional societies to feel fully part of that initiative so that we really can analyse national audits collectively and get the best out of it. So information, that will also then feed through to better commissioning, and we've already been able to give commissioners a new electronic toolkit with information. So there is a lot happening. We've made a number of new commitments that relate directly, in some of the cases, directly to breast cancer. It's like the cancer plan, though. It's not just going to implement itself. It's going to be down to all of us to make it actually happen. But our stated aim is that by 2012 we should have a cancer services that are amongst the best in the world. Is that realistic? I would argue that we are a relatively wealthy country. We've got a national health service. We're spending more on that health service than we have in the past. It is absolutely realistic, and actually we should set our ambition that high. Thank you very much.